producers, particularly on the eastern half of Saskatchewan, although some variability, tended to get a good crop. It was late going in, but they had an open fall and got it off in good shape. Less drying required than in a normal year. Prices for commodities were very strong. Many producers on the east side of the province had their best year ever financially. West side, very spotty performance. The northwest, maybe not so bad, but much of the west central and southwestern part of the province, rainfall remained short, and although the crop may have been better than the terrible crop of 2021, it was still a poor crop, and they did not have nearly as good a year as the rest of the province. In total, it wasn't that far off an average crop, but some people had a quite good crop, and some people had a quite poor crop, so certainly there was a disparity in returns.
Did grain prices hold on as well as many had thought? You know, in some cases, they just kept on going up.
Prices were strong. I think it was a case where in many instances, or at least in some instances, producers could have actually made more money by contracting in advance. There were so many producers burnt by crop contracts in 2021 when they didn't have enough to fulfill their contracts. I think there was a great hesitancy to contract going into 2022. And in many cases on crops, everything from canola to flax, there were values available that ended up being better than what the market offered after harvest. But those prices were still nothing to complain about and remained pretty strong for a lot of crops, with a few exceptions where things have really tailed off in 2022. A couple notables would be flax and oats, where prices are at levels that will be disappointing compared to what producers saw a year ago.
Crop insurance is going to be making some changes next year. There'll be individual coverage. How will drought affect that? Do you have any idea? I know the full details won't be coming out to producers until next year, but have you done any thinking about that?
That's a great question, and I think everybody will be watching with great interest when they finally get their crop insurance information and premium information. In my way of thinking, you know, I'm a person that collected crop insurance 2 years in a row. Crop insurance has been my biggest crop 2 years in a row, and I'm not happy about that at all, but that's the case. So how is it going to look for me going into 2023? What are the premiums going to look like? I think it'll be a case of the crops that I had bigger claims on than the average of my area might have a premium increase that I'm not very happy about. Crops where I did better than the area around me might see premiums go down. That's about as much as I can determine at this point. Previously, we had a system where you had either discounts or surcharges based on your history of all of your crops as a basket compared to your premium. And now they're going to be looking at your individual crop yield and claim history. And it's going to be a change. I think my understanding is they're going to buffer some of it so that your change in premium will have a cap on it, at least in the first year. But I do expect that there could be some surprises when people get their information, and really before that, they won't know until it arrives in the mail. You know, typically this is March before people see that sort of information on their crop insurance.
The one topic that really seemed to get everybody's hackles up a little bit was fertilizer emissions. At the beginning, it appeared that the federal government wanted a 30% reduction by 2030. Then they sort of went back and sort of said, well, no, that's our goal. But it's nothing, you know, put in stone. And now we're going to go through some sort of a strategy that's being developed. There's a big bridge between Saskatchewan farmers, prairie farmers, actually, and what the federal government is looking at. Would that be fair to say?
It's actually an interesting one because, you know, 30% fertilizer emissions target of reduction is actually a couple of years old. It didn't really even get announced in 2022. He was announced well before that, but it gained attention in 2022, and a lot of groups labeled it as a 30% requirement of fertilizer reduction rather than fertilizer emissions reduction. And the government eventually had to backtrack and try to smooth the waters a bit and say, no, this is only emissions and it's only a target. Trust us, we're not going to limit fertilizer use. But there's still groups out there that don't take the government at their word in this regard. So it's certainly become a hot issue and a real striking point of opposition. But I personally don't think it's quite as nefarious as it sounds. I think there are things we can do to reduce fertilizer emissions. Governments have either a carrot or a stick approach in how they accomplish this, and I think there might be a little bit of both that occurs, but I personally don't see it quite as nefarious as some observers do.
I guess a lot of it goes to the Dutch farmer protests, and I mean, you get the political aspect of it. You can tie it all nicely together, but do you think that has any impact on what the federal government thinks? You know, of course, they don't want anything like that happening here.
Well, certainly if they came out and said, yeah, this is a 30% reduction in fertilizer, we're going to monitor you and make sure you reduce your fertilizer, you know, there would be one hell of an uprising in Western Canada and Eastern Canada. I just don't expect that is going to be how the government handles this. But when you see some of the strong arm tactics in countries such as the Netherlands, it does give a lot of people pause.
And I guess the one thing in the back of the mind is, you know, okay, you don't have to do it, but if you want access to certain government programs, you know, that you may have to do it.
It could be that way. I believe that there's a couple of routes that could be followed. I believe, for one thing, there's a need to get some regulations standardized and in place. For instance, in Saskatchewan, it is not against the law to spread nitrogen fertilizer on frozen ground. It is in Alberta and Manitoba, especially Manitoba, where they have requirements that this not be done. Even though we don't like to talk about it, I think there's been quite an increase in people spreading fertilizer in the winter to save time in the spring and putting up with losses or believing that the losses aren't that high. So that's one thing from a regulatory point of view. The other thing I look at that could be done quite easily, and in some cases is happening through some various programs, is encouragement and incentives and financial support for using more nitrogen stabilizers on nitrogen products so that they have less volatility and less gassing off, and therefore the nitrous oxide emissions are reduced. So I think there's things that can be done that wouldn't necessarily be opposed by the majority of producers.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the grain sector, but let's move over quickly to the cattle business. Prices are pretty decent this year, but I think we're still seeing people exiting the business.
That's exactly right. Cow-calf prices, if you look at the 550 weight steers sold for in the fall calf run, probably up 40, 50 cents a pound. That's a good news story, but the bad news is that cow-calf sector is still very marginal for profitability, in many cases losing money and certainly not seeing the returns that the grain industry is. And I think you're seeing more and more small to mid-sized herds say, the heck with this, it's far too much work to be losing money. And if they have any land that can be converted over to crop production rather than tame hay or pasture, that's a far more high return economics. And so I think it's really sad that our cow-calf sector is struggling so mightily and not an easy situation to figure out how to turn that around.
And with the environmental benefits of keeping the land in grass, it would be kind of nice to see some incentives that way.
Well, I think it's even for the grain industry to have a strong cow-calf industry, there's benefits to both sides. But it's labor. There's no way to automate some of the work you have to do with cattle. And it's return and it's opportunity cost when you could have it in grain production instead. Now, there'll always be cattle on the land that cannot be harvested in any other ways except through the mouth of a cow. but anything that can be cropped, you're seeing fences pulled up, you're seeing land broke up, you're seeing herds sold off. It's a continuing trend. In fact, it's happening maybe even more than it did after the drought of 2021. Even with the better prices, producers are exiting the business.
I don't take a look at the auctions, but I'm sure you look at some of the online auctions. Land prices, from what I've been hearing, secondhand, are pretty strong this fall.
Well, and it's surprising, too. You would think that with high interest rates and historic rise in interest rates throughout 2022, that perhaps that would cool off land values to some degree. It seems to be cooling off residential housing prices, but with the returns in the grain industry, with many producers sitting in good cash balance situations, it seems that land prices are continuing to escalate, cash rents continuing to escalate. It'll be interesting, I guess, when we see some official numbers for all of 2022, but anything anecdotal would appear that land price increases have not slowed at all.
Quality is always an important part of land, but how important is location now?
That's a good question. The only thing I think we might see a difference between the west side and the east side of the province, just because of the difference in returns in 2022 because of the moisture situation. And areas that have had back-to-back droughts, in some cases producers would argue back-to-back-to-back droughts, are not nearly as well cashed up as some of the areas that had 50 or 60 bushel canola crops. So those areas with really strong yields on top of very strong prices, they may indeed see more pressure on land prices than some of the drier areas. But and quality of land does make a difference. But when land prices are going up, even the lower quality land tends to be pulled up and probably gets pulled up even further, even a bigger gap to its productive value than some of the good land. But you'll see all sorts of numbers out there. But yeah, we've always been behind Manitoba and Alberta as far as top land prices. But the numbers now are, man, they're quite a lot higher than they were just a few years ago.